This episode is brought to you by the Arvada Center, because they're kicking off their summer concert series in June. Relax under the stars at the Arvada Center's outdoor amphitheater and take in acts like Melissa Etheridge, Big Richard, Tower of Power, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, The Spin Doctors, and so much more. Concerts are scheduled for June through September. You can find a whole schedule of events and get your tickets today at arvadacenter.org. That's arvadacenter.org. Today on CityCast Denver, 190 bodies piled on top of each other, stored in a room temperature building for years. A family shocked by a call from the FBI when their loved one's body was found in a hearse parked for months in a funeral director's backyard. Body parts sold on the black market. What is going on with the funeral industry in Colorado? Faith Haug is director of mortuary sciences at Arapahoe Community College, and she's on today with some answers. Oh, and just a note, if you don't want to hear any more about human remains, you may want to skip this episode. Today is Wednesday, March 6th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Faith Haug, welcome to CityCast Denver.
Thank you.
Faith, why does messed up stuff keep happening to dead bodies here?
I have no answer for that. None at all. Something in the water. I don't know. Is it, what is it at the flat? What is it out there? Flatirons? Where the, what am I talking about?
Oh, are you thinking about Rocky Flats?
The Rocky Flats. Yeah, there we go. It's all that stuff maybe. I don't know.
It's something in, I don't want to say in the industry that you're in, but what's happening? Why are we seeing all of these crazy stories?
Well, I think that we've seen two crazy stories close to each other, you know, and, you know, there's been plenty of other crazy stories nationwide. It's just that, you know, after the big one in October and then this littler one in, I guess, one this month, you know, I think it seems a little bit more prevalent than it actually is. If you look nationwide, there's things going on all the time. It's just more eyes are here right now.
So we're talking about the Penrose Funeral Home, where 190 bodies were found stored improperly, which is like a nice way of saying there were deceased people in a room temperature building.
Right.
And then this last one is a gentleman that, among other things, was found to be carrying around a deceased person in a hearse for 2 years.
Right.
But I guess what I want to get at is, while I understand that this is a nationwide, we're not unique in that way, there are some unique things about Colorado's regulations around funeral homes. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what's so different here?
Yeah, we're the only state currently that does not have any requirements for a person to be a funeral director or an embalmer.
No requirements?
No.
So I could walk into a funeral home today and get a job?
Yes.
And that is not the case, say, in Indiana or California.
No.
What does that look like other places?
It looks different in every state, but generally, you know, some states have just one license. So it's a dual license. You're both a funeral director and embalmer. That usually requires that you graduate from an accredited mortuary school, that you take the national board exam and pass both the sciences and the arts sections of that. Sometimes that includes a one to two year apprenticeship after school. Sometimes that includes passing a state law test. So a lot of different things. And most states are some kind of combination of all of that, if not all of it, together.
That's a lot compared to someone walking in and not having any of that.
Right. So, for example, my first license is in the state of Illinois. I had to do about a year full time of prerequisite classes to be able to get into mortuary school. Then I did a year of full time mortuary school. Then I took and passed the national board exam, sciences and the arts. Then I did a 1 year internship in the state of Illinois. And then I was a licensed funeral director and embalmer. So it was about a 4 year process.
And that's not to say that that kind of schooling doesn't happen here. I mean, we are at Arapahoe Community College right now where you run this program that does all of that. So it does exist, but the regulations don't require
it. It's not required. Mm-hmm.
You moved here from another place that had all that accreditation.
Yeah.
What did you think when you were moving to Colorado to continue the work you were doing?
I mean, I've been here for 10 years and it's just the way it is here now. But yeah, when I first moved here from another state and had been licensed, you know, at that point in two different states and had gone through that process, it was, it felt strange to be the same, you know, the same level or the same job title as other people who hadn't done the things that I had to do.
I can see how that feels for you as someone walking into this experience, but maybe you're now out in the world with other folks in your industry and you say, I'm from Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Does that come with?
Yes.
What does that come with?
It comes with an assumption that all people in Colorado are unlicensed. Well, we are. There is no license here for the state of Colorado, or that we're uneducated or unqualified. And it just kind of becomes this blanket assumption that everybody in Colorado is
like
that
a fly
way.
By night.
Yeah. And that's very, very not true. But the assumption on the nationwide scale is pretty much that anybody that works in Colorado is less qualified or unqualified than other states.
Do you know how Colorado got this way?
They deregulated in 1982-83. I don't know what the laws were before that, to be honest with you, but I know they deregulated 40 years ago.
Interesting. We'll dig into that a little bit, I think.
Yeah. But what I'm told is that it was a push by corporations to be able to pay people less, essentially. That's the truth of it, you know.
Sure, which is not, I would say, is not an uncommon thing amongst
not.
Other industries.
Sure, yeah.
Is how can we make it more profitable?
Right.
And deregulation mm-hmm. is one of those
yes.
things.
Mm-hmm.
This just happens to be something where we're dealing with humans.
Right.
Right. So, mm-hmm. So I kind of want to talk about how these situations happen, because a lack of a license doesn't make someone say store 190
right.
bodies improperly
mm-hmm.
while their family thinks that they've been cremated. Like, I know you can't be in that space, but how would you speculate a business gets to that point?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I mean, in that particular case, from what, you know, is out there in public record, it seems that started pretty early on in his business. It wasn't something that just happened like in the last year. I mean, there had been, from what I've read, bodies, you know, stored for 4 to 5 years in there. So it wasn't like it just happened over the last few months. From what I have read and what I've put together, it was based on probably a lot of financial mismanagement. And so I don't think anybody gets into a business with the intent from day one to do something like that. Unless you're a very, very sick person, I can't imagine why you would go through the trouble of starting a business to do something like that. I think that it gets away from people who are probably not well suited to being responsible with money or responsible with many other things. And it just kind of builds upon itself. So, you know, you stop, you're mismanaging your money. Now you can't pay your vendors. Now nobody will cremate your bodies for you. Now what do you do?
Because that's usually sort of not outsourced, but you hire someone
else. Sure, it's a third
party.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's very common. There's nothing at all unusual or unethical about that. That's very common in the industry.
So it's kind of like any other business in that you fall behind on a bill.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you still need to have money coming
mm-hmm.
in, but you're not fulfilling the promises you've made
right.
to your customers.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it just
right.
happens to be
yeah.
people's loved
yeah.
ones. So I wonder if part of the problem that Colorado has a reputation for this, like, are we attracting people who are just not good business people, or even worse, are not respectful of people's bodies?
I don't know that I'd go so far as to say we're attracting them, but it's an easy place for people that can't work in other states any longer to still work. So if you have been working in another state and you've lost your license for some kind of thing, you don't have to answer to any kind of agency here. There's no checking into your background, nothing. You can come here and start a business and nobody checks anything or particularly cares. So you could have lost a license in another state. You could have never been licensed in another state. So it's easier to start a funeral business here than anywhere else because there's no requirements for who has to operate it.
And I would think as a consumer, when I'm looking at a funeral home, I'm assuming someone who's saying, I'm the so-and-so funeral services,
right.
I would assume as a customer, you have the proper
right.
certifications. Mm-hmm. But you're saying you don't have to have
right.
those. So I could start
sure.
Breeze
yes.
funeral service
sure.
tomorrow. And
sure.
Okay. So I can see where the newsworthiness of a particular case or multiple cases could lead to a narrative that the entire funeral industry in Colorado
right.
is broken. But can you put these cases in perspective? Like, how common is it to have a situation like we've seen these last couple months?
I think it's very uncommon. I mean, there's, you know, definitely a handful of cases in the country that have been on that scale of Penrose. You know, in the last decade, maybe a handful nationwide. But most of these are just small little, you know, infractions here and there. So, you know, have it, one body is too much. One is
right.
too many, right? So, but it's not the same as 190, but at the same time it is, because one is too many. So it's hard to say, you know, to put it in perspective. Most of these smaller issues, you know, in Colorado generally come from the fact that it's not well regulated or inspected. So we don't have to have annual inspections of facilities. We don't have to prove that we're abiding by certain things, you know, with facilities or staff or anything like that. So what happens is it just kind of becomes a slow slide into noncompliance with industry standards. So, you know, it'll be things maybe like we're not keeping the proper cooling that we should. And that's not to say that those regulations don't exist. Colorado does have an entire mortuary science code, but when nobody's inspecting it and when you're not required to prove that you're upholding those standards, you know, then things kind of start to slip here and there. And next thing you know, there's your people being, you know, being stored with no cooling whatsoever or kinds of other things. And so on the general scale, it's a lot of small infractions of the existing regulations already because there's no enforcement of them.
Have you seen these kinds of things working somewhere that you've worked in another state? These kinds of stories happen.
They happen everywhere.
In Illinois too.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. The difference is that there are, you know, annual inspections or inspections on some kind of with regularity in other states, you have to have licensed staff. So there's a lot more checking into, you know, a business's how they're meeting the standard than here. There's unless there's a complaint, there's no inspections there other than your standard business fire, you know, those kinds of things that would be for any business. There's no industry specific inspections unless there's a complaint, and that's only recently. Before that, even if there was a complaint, the owner could refuse an inspection,
and then
there's no
recourse.
Mm-mm, no.
Wow.
And one of the things I want to
yeah,
this particular funeral home in Penrose, there had been complaints that were not inspected.
So there was
multiple complaints over time that had gone unchecked.
The state just didn't mm-hmm. follow up.
Correct.
And they can work, so they were able to continue operating.
Yes.
And then that just leads mm-hmm. to more yeah. issues. Again, the Penrose case was pretty sensational, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about dozens of bodies.
Yeah.
And it's easy for the press to do stories like
sure.
this. But I wonder, as a person in this industry, how do you feel when you see stories like that? What's your takeaway?
It's disappointing. You know, so in the case of the most recent one, that's been sensationalized a little bit, in my opinion, because as a funeral home, and Apollo Funeral Home is the one we're talking about with the body in the hearse in the gentleman's backyard, and he wasn't driving it around. It was
oh.
non-operational, so it had been parked in his backyard, is what I understand. And you know, for a funeral home that had been in business for 10 years, to have that served a mostly low-income indigent population with a lot of public administrator cases, which means the people that he was taking care of didn't have family, didn't, you know, they were county cases is kind of the not nice way to say it that it's kind of said. But, you know, to have 30 sets of unclaimed cremated remains is not unusual at all.
I've sort of heard this anecdotally,
yeah.
I will say. My best friend, Casey, who's a
yeah.
friend of yours from this industry,
sure.
said, when I started working with pets,
yeah.
people were way more likely to pick
100%.
Up their pet
oh,
cremations
sure.
than their
families.
Sure,
every funeral home in town has unclaimed cremated remains. Now, what the owner should have done when he closed his business is turn those cremated remains over either to the medical examiner, asked another funeral home to take custody of them, asked a cemetery to put them in a crypt for safekeeping instead of taking them to his home. My guess, and this is complete speculation, is that he was intending to reopen his business at some point and wanted to keep those in case a family member did come forward to claim them. So he did better than just getting rid of them.
He didn't just dump them.
So, but it's been sensationalized. 30 sets of unidentified. They're not unidentified. They're unclaimed. They have identification. They can find out who they are. But they were, from what I understand, again, you know, I don't have all the information, but I have more than the average person, is that they were people that who had no family to claim their remains, or whose families did not claim their remains, and that in and of itself is far more common than the general public realizes. So it's hard for the for just a regular person to think, why wouldn't you take your loved one's cremated right. remains? But there's so many issues at play there. We can't say. But to have, you know, to have 30 over the course of a decade, that is not unusual.
That's a pretty normal
It's pretty
number.
Normal. Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking like...
He could have done something better with them when he closed the business or when the business was closed. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt until other, you know, news is broken or that we find out otherwise that those were people that no one had claimed that he took to his home for safekeeping in the event of, you know, reopening his business and then had been evicted. And so they were discovered, but it wasn't it. You know, I feel like that I've got nothing to say about the body in the hearse. There's no excuse for that. But I do think that the 30 sets of cremated remains probably have a reasonable expectation that isn't or explanation that is not as sensationalized as it's been made to be. So we'll have to just wait and see.
This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered. Pine Melon is a next generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. Get high quality meats, eggs, and dairy from small local farms, fresh baked breads from local bakeries, and more, as well as all of your favorite pantry staples. Best part is, Pine Melon offers same-day delivery to Denver and soon Boulder within a two-hour window, no subscription necessary. Save time in your busy schedule and get fresh and healthy groceries delivered right to your door. Join the movement and support local today. Use promo code CITYCASTDENVER for $75 off your first delivery at pinemelon.com. That's pinemelon.com.
I think there's a very heavy true crime-y mindset for us in general, and so we're thinking this has to be something
malicious
horrible.
Or something, and it's not. If I wanted to start a funeral home and I had very little capital and very little, I could rent a storefront office for $1,000 a month and get a county contract, and then I've got guaranteed revenue for that year, 2 years, while I'm building my business to serve the general public. And that's not an uncommon way for funeral homes to get started. And so I think, and from what's been in articles that he did serve that population, you know, people that were unhoused or had no next of kin that were public administrator cases. And so, again, I would just say that in my opinion, that's probably been sensationalized until we have more information. I'm going to assume that those were unclaimed remains and not just unidentified.
Random, you know.
And he should have done something else with them when the business closed, but he could have disposed of them and he didn't do that. So at least they still exist and they can be claimed, right?
It's not as grim as it seems.
Yeah, so let's just focus on the body and the hearse because that's the really part. Yeah.
That's something that you don't see at other funeral homes.
Mm-hmm.
There is this thing though where a lot of these stories can seem like issues of moral conscience or like a lack thereof.
Sure.
Because people are leaving their loved ones in the care of who they think are professionals. Mm-hmm. Do you think that increased regulation of this industry through lawmaking is an answer? Because will stronger laws keep people, like, I'm thinking about the funeral director, Megan Hess, who went to jail for selling deceased people's mm-hmm. body parts.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that more regulation would keep someone like her from doing awful things?
I think that if it were properly funded and properly administered, it could prevent or it could catch things earlier. And we can say, well, regulate all day long. And I do think that there's a case to be made for that. But we also have to consider, is our state going to provide the budget and the manpower to do this? Because guess what? We already have regulation that's not being followed up on. In the case of Penrose, there were complaints filed and they were not followed up on because of no manpower, no budget, no staff. So we can make all the regulation we want, but unless it's going to be enforced, it doesn't really do anything. So, you know, I think that the knee-jerk reaction is we need to increase regulation, we need to licensing and all those. And I think that there are definitely conversations that need to happen around that. And I do think that there is a need for some kind of minimum standard of entry into the profession. Absolutely. However, we have to just look a step further and go, well, we can write all the laws we want, but if they're not enforced, I mean, it's not going to make a difference. So we have to be able to back up what we're saying we're going to do.
Do you have any advice for listeners who might lose a family member mm-hmm. to make sure they don't get caught in one of these awful stories?
Here's the thing. So there are wonderful funeral directors here that did not go to school and they just are. I can't deny that. And like I say, when I moved here, it blew my mind that I was working alongside people that could call themselves a funeral director and embalmer that didn't have to do the things I had to do. And that just seemed very, it just seemed crazy to me, you know. But in that time, you know, I've worked alongside a lot of people that are wonderful at their jobs. And one thing to remember about death care, you know, it's only really been an industry for the last 150 years. And that's a blink of an eye in human history, right?
And what do you mean by an industry?
A business industry where people make a living and it's commercialized and it's a commodity. Before that, you know, it was much more communities taking care of their own dead, people taking care of their own dead in their homes, all of those things. So the way that modern day death care is relatively new when we look at, you know, back to the Egyptian times when we cared for our own dead without having education or anything like that. So I think there's a case to be made for saying that it is something you can learn, you know, by doing. But again, what we lack is an industry standard for minimum competency. And if we are going to continue on where this is an industry, this is a business, this is a profession, we have to have some kind of minimum competency, some kind of minimum standard for entry. That's it. But, you know, when it's not necessary, people aren't just going to do that because it costs money. So
I'm also thinking we're at a community college right now where you teach, which I think is much more accessible than
it's
a lot of.
It's much more accessible, but it's not free.
Sure.
You know, and think of people that are maybe 50s, coming up on 60. They've been doing this for 20. I mean, 40. You could have been doing this for 40 years, right? And now you have to go to school for something. They're just going to quit. They're not going to do that. They're not going to invest the time and the energy to do to get a degree for something they've been doing their whole life. So what the fear is with this licensing is I think it's a little unfounded, but I think that some of the corporations and some of the voices that are in this conversation are concerned that if you do something like this and require these things, it's going to collapse the existing workforce because people aren't going to put up the money to go to school for something they've already been doing. I think there's some truth in that. I don't think it would be on the scale that they're predicting. But, you know, I guess my point is, you know, personally as a program chair of a mortuary science department and a person with education myself that's been in this industry my whole adult life, I support education. But I can't say that you can't be good at the job without it because I know that to be not true just having lived here for 10 years.
So could I, if I was utilizing your, if you have a funeral home, mm-hmm. could I call and ask you if you're certified or?
So there's a voluntary certification in Colorado, but only 20 something people in the whole state have taken advantage of it.
Oh, wow.
Because it's not necessary. Why would I pay an association $250 for a certification I don't need that doesn't mean anything? So they tried to put this together to kind of let people distinguish themselves if they did go to school and did do these things, which I think was a good idea. But in practice, what it's become is I don't have it because I don't need it. I'm licensed in other states. It doesn't do anything for me to pay the money for something that's not a real license. And a lot of people feel the same. Why would I pay the money for something that isn't? It's just nothing. Truly, that's the attitude toward it. And not to dig at the association, I think it was a good idea and allowed people to distinguish themselves that wanted to, but it hasn't had the success that I think it they were hoping it did. I mean, you could call a funeral home and ask them if they, and it depends what's important to you. If you think that you want to deal with somebody that's gone to mortuary school, ask those questions. There are funeral homes in town that maybe one staff member has, but that doesn't mean they're going to be available or that they even maybe do a better job than someone else. There's, you know, I've been in the industry a long time and I've got my strengths and weaknesses.
Sounds like it's hard to know.
It's hard to know because there are good businesses out there with people that haven't gone to school that are running their business ethically and according to the standards that do exist. And there's places, guess what, that have people that have gone to school and aren't. So it's not that simple to say, if you haven't gone to school and you haven't done this, then don't do business with them. Because I can think of a long list right off the top of my head of people that have that I wouldn't do business with here.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that haven't that I would. I guess as a consumer, if you're listening, figure out what matters to you, what makes you feel like you can trust somebody and what makes you feel, connected to them. However, there are people that say that, these two individuals we're talking about, that they felt that with them.
Yeah.
So I hate my answer to be, I don't know. Sometimes you can't tell, but that's the truth. You just have to do your due diligence and go with your gut.
Yeah.
And remember that, in the case of Penrose, I do think those, in my opinion, is my opinion, that those were just bad people. And I think that
We've got text messages and things to show.
Well, what's interesting, here's what's interesting, and again, this is my opinion, don't come for me about it, but when that news broke, everybody was like, no surprise.
People in your industry
mm-hmm.
said, we knew.
Oh, somebody just gives you the ick, and that was them.
You knew.
Yeah.
If someone said to you, oh, my family member said they were using Penrose, you would say,
ooh,
please don't.
But you couldn't put your finger on it. It was they just gave people the ick. But you can't call the police or be like, hey, this guy makes you feel icky. Go, like, that's not, you can't.
Yeah. But in this case in particular, you said there had been complaints.
There had been.
So that may be where the regulation will
sure
help.
And in the second case, again, I know that individual,
Littleton funeral director, you did.
And
know.
I again, speculation. I don't believe that. I think this was a slow descent into mismanagement and substance issues and other things that unfortunately resulted in bad business management. I don't think that person started out as a. I think the starting point was different for those two businesses. I think one, they just were. I think if they had run a gas station, they would have run it unethically.
Yeah, and I think that to me, the takeaway from this conversation is like. This is not an industry full of nefarious people.
No.
We have instances like any other
industry.
But when
we do something wrong, it's so much worse because of the nature of it, right?
Right.
So if I'm just running a gas station and I'm a bad guy, I don't want to say it's a victimless crime. There isn't, but...
But you're not dealing with
I'm not dealing with someone's mom or someone's dad or someone's child. It's a diff... The stakes are higher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Faith, thank you so much.
Yeah.
This was great.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
As Faith mentioned, the funeral home industry in Colorado has been deregulated since the 1980s. But earlier this week, Colorado lawmakers introduced legislation that would create educational and licensing requirements for funeral directors, cremationists, embalmers, and others working in the field. If passed, Senate Bill 174 would go into effect January 1st, 2026, and include criminal background checks, which are currently not required by law. Another bill is set to be introduced this session that would also require routine inspections of funeral homes. That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed this show, why not take a minute to tell a funeral director about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See ya. Think about that. And then think about the woman that did it and the crazy perm she had and...